You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, on today's show, we're going to talk about coaching changes and the timing of changes and how that might affect Arkansas. Another big change in the Power Four this morning with Oklahoma State letting Mike Gundy go. We'll also talk some about the Arkansas-Notre Dame matchup this weekend, and we'll take a look around the SEC. First, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
The big news in college football today, Mike Gundy let go by Oklahoma State. I'm always interested to see how these press releases on the team's official websites read. Like, usually it's Virginia Tech announces a transition in leadership. Like, nobody ever gets fired. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma State, their website today says Oklahoma State and Gundy part ways. So this is three Power Four coaches now that have been let go after or through the first 4 weeks of the season. Virginia Tech and UCLA obviously did too. There's going to be others, most likely. I mean, a lot of people think it's just a matter of time before Florida and Billy Napier part ways, however they decide to phrase it in their press release. But it does make me wonder. You know, I said yesterday on the podcast in reference to Pittman, I don't know what it accomplishes by letting him go in the season. You know, like players – you know, you fire your coach. Well, you've got a transfer portal that opens. You've got players who maybe they haven't played their full four games yet, and they say, "Hey, I'm out of here. I want to hold on to my year of eligibility." An addendum to that would be, unless you think it helps you get into a position to hire a coach at the end of the year. And I don't know if that's what's going on with UCLA and Virginia Tech. I really don't think that's what's going on. I think both of them lost to. And Oklahoma State, you can say the same thing. You know, they lose to a group of whatever opponent, five or six. We're at odds on what you call that. But, you know, they lose to a non-power opponent, and they're off to a bad start, and they let their coach go. I feel like that is a different situation than – a little bit of a different situation than what Arkansas is in, where you have lost games, yes, and you lose to Memphis, and that's inexcusable, yes. But you're also a couple of plays away from potentially being 4-0, and we're talking about this team in a little bit of a different story. Oklahoma State, they lost 69-3 to Oregon this year. Virginia Tech, they got ran off their home field by Old Dominion. UCLA lost to, New Mexico at the Rose Bowl. So a little bit of a different story, I feel like, between these teams. But it does make me wonder, as you get later in the year, what is the discussion like in terms of how do you let your coach go now, whether now is in October or early November or mid-November or the end of the season, and how does that affect your positioning for what I think is going to be a very crowded job market this year? Remember, almost nobody let their coaches go last year because they didn't feel like they have the money for the buyouts last year. It just feels like this is going to border on unprecedented levels of job openings. And then you could potentially have, you know, jobs filled by existing people somewhere. It could get really nuts, I feel like, at the end of this year.
Yeah, I want you to help me understand something, because I am confused about this, and I imagine this might be a stupid question, but I do imagine there are a lot of, like, the average person is also confused about this. The transfer portal thing, when your coach leaves, you get a 30-day window, but So like UCLA, for example, all their players right now could enter the transfer portal, but they wouldn't be playing for a new team until next year.
Right.
I haven't seen where any of them have entered the portal. I was just looking before we came on the show, because I would guess that you would kind of have some mass exodus, but I just haven't seen that.
Keyshawn Blackstock did this when Michigan State fired Mel Tucker a couple of years ago. Now, I don't think he committed to Arkansas. I don't remember when he committed to Arkansas, but I do know that he got into the portal after Tucker got fired. So I don't know. I mean, maybe if you're an athlete, you're a player, and maybe it's kind of a similar situation, but the inverse of what we were just talking about, maybe it helps you get a head start on all the other players that are getting into the portal. And, you know, maybe you can get that paperwork signed before they find somebody better at your position. I don't know what the appeal is there, but yeah, you get a 30-day window whenever a coach is fired.
Man, we talk about coaches having a lot to do in recruiting now. You having to look at transfer portal recruits during the season with all these firings, that adds a layer. But no, I mean, I think the mid-season thing, I think we differ a little bit because to me, I think you could, you know, if you're going to make the move with Sam Pittman, I think you wait until the buyout drops, until you hit that threshold that you need. But I don't think that necessarily means you have to wait till the end of the season. It would have to, you know, the numbers have to line up. But I don't think, like, I think that is what, if they were going to do it, I would think that would be the best option. Because, honestly, I think a lot of it is that kind of trying to get to the market earlier than others. And I think it's also trying to send the message of, okay, everybody, get off our case. We're gonna do it. Like we're making change. We are, you know, this is a thing that we're working on. And I think that's kind of when you see, especially after these really bad losses, like we talked about to these opponents that you should not lose to, especially like Oklahoma State, the way that they lost. You're trying to send the message to your base and your people that, like, we also don't accept this. And so I think that's part of it for some of these teams. And like you said, it differs program by program, but I think that's part of it. I will say on the front of needing to get to the market early, how much do you think, I mean, there's nothing stopping ADs from, and I'm not trying to like imply anything. I'm not saying that like Hunter Yurecek is doing this. I have no indication that that's happening. But like an AD could be calling around and trying to gauge some interest from some potential candidates while they're coaches. I mean, that's happened, hasn't it? Like that's a thing that happens. That's not weird, right?
I don't know that anybody admits it, but
well, sure. Probably. But there's a lot of things I don't admit that they do all the time. Yeah. That's the other thing is, yes, you want to get to the market early, but you can kind of be getting your ducks in a row before, and I think that's pretty common, I think.
With Pittman, if Arkansas were to be, say, like 2-7, 2-6, 2-7, again, they've got to be 4 games below 500 mm-hmm. this year for the buyout to drop, and whether or not that's a consideration, I don't know. But if they're 2-6, 2-7 after Auburn, Mississippi State, and you got a bye week coming up there, yeah, I could see that happening there. But I'm saying this early in the season.
Yeah, I agree.
It just seems like it's awfully early because I don't know how that if you fire your coach, you're basically, in my opinion, and I feel like you're just kind of kissing your season goodbye.
Yeah.
Like this year, we're just going to go ahead and call this off. Hope that the interim coach can maybe salvage a magical win somewhere along the way.
And that's happened, you know.
But I feel like with Arkansas, the season, even though I don't think it's going to go particularly well, I don't feel like it's a lost cause yet the way that it is at UCLA or Virginia Tech or at Oklahoma State.
How quickly do you think it can become a lost cause, though?
I mean, soon.
Yeah.
Soon. It just kind of depends on how they compete in these next few games. Mm-hmm. You know, like, are they competitive with Notre Dame this weekend? Or does Notre Dame come in here and win by 20?
Well, I asked you yesterday if there was anything they could do in a loss that would give you confidence, and you said no.
No,
they would have to win.
And if they lose,
then what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, if you beat Notre Dame by 20, 25 points.
If you beat Notre
points,
Dame at all, I think that's a big deal.
It's a big deal. But I'm just talking about, does
it give
you more
confidence?
I don't
think it saves your job, but I think it gives you more confidence.
Does it give you more confidence in the season and how the season
goes? I think so.
I feel like there's two different things at play here. There's the season, and then there's the big picture.
Yeah.
And to me, and not everybody thinks like me, and I totally understand that, but to me, I'm more focused right now on the season,
mm-hmm.
whereas I think a lot of people are focused more on the big picture. What happens next year? How do you put yourself in a position to be in a better position next year? So I think those are two different conversations that can be had with Gundy, by the way. It will always be that his last Power Four win was over Arkansas last year.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. They didn't win a conference game last year. They haven't been competitive at all this year. I think they beat Tennessee Martin in their opener, and then they've lost all their games since then. So, and we all know that game last year, Oklahoma State, in my opinion, should not have won that game.
Yeah.
Like the way that game played out, it was just it was sad.
Yeah.
For Arkansas.
Yeah.
And I always thought Mike Gundy would end up at Arkansas. I say always. There was a point in time where I thought Mike Gundy might end up at Arkansas.
Really?
Because I just – the proximity. Mm-hmm. I think he likes being close to home. You know,
where's he from?
He's from Oklahoma. Okay. I don't know exactly where he's from. But, you know, he's lived in Stillwater basically his entire life. He went there and he was a player. I think he might have gone away as an assistant coach for a short time, but then he came back as an assistant coach, and then he was Les Miles' offensive coordinator, and then he became the head coach. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you never have to ask me how old Mike Gundy is, because in 2007, he was 40.
That was actually, I'm 40, yeah.
You asked earlier today, why did they not fire him? Why did they wait till a Tuesday to fire him?
Okay, but that is crazy.
Yesterday was the anniversary of I'm a man, I'm 40. Maybe they
and?
Just
no. I'm just they, the Tuesday thing. I genuinely want to talk about that. I can't understand.
And
that.
They played a Friday game against Tulsa.
You could have done it Saturday or yeah. Sunday or Monday. Why Tuesday? That's so weird. They let him do his regular press conference.
Do they play this week?
I don't think they do. I cannot understand.
They don't play Baylor. No, they do. They do.
They
play
do
Baylor
play this,
this
weekend.
Week.
I can't understand random Tuesday. Like you let him do his pregame thing. That's. To me, I don't know. And maybe I'm just like clutching my pearls for no reason, but like, I just think it's crazy. You know, we talked about the, I think we alluded to this yesterday or maybe last week, where with a coach like that, who is the best coach you've ever had, he's been there for what, 21 years?
Yeah, 21.
You want to, you know, you need to show him the door, but you want to do it with a certain amount of like respect and dignity. The random Tuesday, letting him do the whole song and dance yesterday, I think is like the opposite of that. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't care. I think that's crazy.
Yeah, it's different.
That doesn't make any sense.
it to me, what it screams is that there was some sort of power struggle behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And that, you know, eventually the most powerful entity finally won and said, we're doing this mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, you know, with Oklahoma State, I feel like they're in a similar situation with Arkansas in that, you know, I thought that whenever Oklahoma and Texas left the Big 12, I thought Oklahoma State was going to be positioned really yeah. well to compete in that conference, not just in football, but like in a lot of sports. But that hasn't played out. And, you know, you listen to his comments earlier this year, their money situation's not good. Like mm-hmm. they got to the point that they got to because of Boone Pickens mm-hmm. and everything that he did for that program. But then when he died, it feels like the program has kind of, you know, not died, but certainly has gone downhill steadily, yeah. if not, you know, and accelerated over the last couple of years. It's just, and you think about Arkansas, it's what Hunter Yurecek's comments were at the Touchdown Club. He said, it's finances, man. It's finances. If you want to know why you're not in a position to win a national championship, it's finances. Mike Gundy made the comments earlier this year when they went before they went to Oregon. They're like, look at what Oregon spends versus what we spend. Mm-hmm. And yet you're supposed to compete with that team. So, you know, and if you make a change with Pittman, like there's going to be some sticker shock that comes with that change. Going back to what we were talking about earlier, all of the teams that are going to potentially be making a change in coaches this year, it's going to, I think, potentially reset the coaching market mm-hmm. and what people are getting paid. Arkansas went through this whenever they hired Pittman. Missouri was open. Ole Miss was open. Mississippi State was open. And Arkansas talked to all three of those coaches who ended up in those jobs, Drinkwitz and Kiffin and Mike Leach, and ended up hiring Pittman for less than what was being paid to them, significantly less than what was being paid in those other jobs. Was the money there if they wanted to hire Lane Kiffin? Maybe. I don't know. But there are going to be some sticker shock, I think, that comes with this. Like, if you want to be a competitive football program, you're going to have to compete financially with the teams that are competing for titles. And, you know, so if you think that Pittman making $5.5 million per year with some deferred compensation, if that's enough, that's going to be a drop in the bucket, I feel like, to what's going to be needed when you do go out in the market this offseason, assuming that's what ends up happening.
And that's another reason why I think, and I know there have been reports that, you know, Arkansas, the money people at Arkansas say that the buyout for Pittman doesn't matter. I think it should. That's why, part of why I think it should. Now, the difference, what, $3 million, that's not going to necessarily make or break your ability to hire a good coach, but it's going to help if you mm-hmm. have that available to you. You would rather have it. It's, I don't know, to me, you would rather have that than yeah. not. And I just, you know, that's why I think it should matter.
It
maybe
it
doesn't, but I think it should.
It might help in who you're able to hire.
Yeah, that's
because,
what I mean. Yeah.
You know, you're going to potentially have to go pay a contract off yeah. somewhere else. You have hire coordinators. You might have to buy them out of whatever, you know, yeah. position that they're in. So really interesting to track this. But now Oklahoma State's joined Virginia Tech and UCLA as teams that are looking for a head coach. And again, I think there are going to be a lot of teams that are looking for coaches. Looking ahead to this Notre Dame game, I've kind of been looking into the numbers a little bit here in the last day or so. There's a lot of people who are expecting a shootout mm-hmm. this weekend. Maybe I should say a lot of people except for Vegas, because in Vegas, we were kind of surprised when we were looking at the numbers this morning that depending on which sports book you look at, 4 to 4.5 points, Notre Dame is the favorite. But pretty much everywhere you look, the total is about 64.5 points. And you look at the games that these teams have played over the last few weeks, and you would say, well, that seems kind of low. I mean, Notre Dame, they lost to A&M 41-40. They lost to they beat Purdue the other day 56-30. Arkansas obviously had that shootout with Ole Miss. Memphis was a fairly high-scoring game. And so on its face, you would say that this feels like it ought to be a game with a lot of points scored, because Arkansas scored a lot of points. Notre Dame has scored a lot of points. They've both given up a lot of points. I don't know that Notre Dame's defense is quite as bad as some people think. I've got a suspicion here, and I think that this could maybe be – well, I've seen Arkansas's defense play, but the suspicion is – if your offense scores really quickly, that it puts your defense in a little bit of a bind. And that's what's happening with Notre Dame right now. You look at the number of possessions that Notre Dame's defense has been on the field every game. 11 possessions against Miami, and this doesn't count end of half possessions where you just kneel down on the ball. 11 possessions against Miami, 13 possessions against Texas A&M, 13 possessions the other day against Purdue. And in the Purdue game, Purdue also had a kickoff return for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. So they've been on the field a lot, but you look at, you know, the number of points that they've given up relative to the number of possessions they've had. It's not a good number, but it's not a terrible number either. And then Notre Dame offensively, if you were to put them in the SEC based on the efficiency ratings that I do, they would have the third best offense in the SEC right now based on who they have played, which is basically, have they played Power 4 teams? Notre Dame, pretty much everybody they play is Power 4. And then, you know, I like with Arkansas, I count Memphis toward it because they're a quality.
But you throw out Alabama and you throw out the FCS games and all that. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to learn a lot about both of these teams, because I think Notre Dame has played a lot of, you know, who's the worst offense they've played?
I guess Purdue.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty obvious. Yeah. That's
obvious. Miami, they're a different kind of offense, but they're an efficient offense.
Yeah, and their offensive line looks fantastic.
They're more of a ball control type. You know, they're going to run it a lot.
Yeah. So I think, you know, Purdue's the worst offense. And then how many points did they give up to Purdue?
Well, Purdue scored 23 points on offense. 23 points on offense / field goals.
Okay.
Because they had a touchdown return.
I think Arkansas's offense is going to be worth more than 23 points in most of its games this year. And I would venture that being true against Notre Dame. I don't know. I know Notre Dame fans, there's like a lot of angst about the defense and about the defensive coordinator and everything. I don't necessarily know that it's that dire, but I don't know. I don't think it's good. I think it's going to be high scoring.
Yeah, I think it's going to be high scoring. I just wonder if it's going to be as high scoring as people think it's going to be. So the efficiency ratings that I do, I've got a little formula, and it spits out a number. It's got Notre Dame winning this game 38-31.
Okay.
So that would be – I think that there are some people who might go into this game thinking it would be higher scoring than that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no – I mean, obviously, there's no way to know if this is going to be the actual score.
I kind of hate doing score predictions. I hate having to come up with them myself. Yeah. I think doing it with a model like that is really cool. I just hate when it's like I have to – it's like, what do you think the score is going to be? I'm like, I don't know. just come up with something. I'll just pick some numbers.
Yeah. Whenever you're asked to pick scores, do you come up with like traditional scores, or do you got –
I come
up
with traditional ones.
Really
I did
random.
This today. I did like a written Q&A with a Notre Dame blog, and they asked me at the end who I thought was going to win and to do a score prediction. And I was like, and I try to make it work out to like a pretty even score.
See, here's what you should do. You should try to like come up with a scoregami every time. You know, the final score is going to be 47-12. I mean, how many times do you see that score?
Very
you know what
few.
I mean?
Yeah. I like the Razorback scoregami account. I appreciate that.
I mean, I could give you a unique score here. Technically, it says Notre Dame 37.97, Arkansas 31.16, but I don't
might
think that they've got enough
rules.
Digits on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I might have to change some rules for that to happen, but you know, you never know.
Round up, round down, 38-31. You know, I think something that Arkansas's got, Notre Dame doesn't have a running quarterback. Carr, their quarterback, he didn't run the ball. Mm-hmm. Like, I've looked at his stats. I think he's got one rushing yard all year. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure he's been sacked quite a bit. That probably, you know, probably skews it a little bit. But, you know, typically if you've got a running quarterback, you've got some rushing yards mm-hmm. at this point in the year. Rainer from Arkansas State. What did I say?
Oklahoma.
I almost said Oklahoma State. My goodness.
New school.
I've been spending too much time down in Fort Smith. From Arkansas State. He had some rushing yards in that game. Now, his rushing yards didn't look so good because Arkansas sacked him several times, and I think it was like 37 or 42 mm-hmm. yards that he lost in that game. I always like putting sack-adjusted yards for quarterbacks. I think that sack-adjusted, he ran for something like 70 yards against Arkansas. And then obviously Chambliss ran for him pretty well, or against him pretty well at Ole Miss a couple of weeks ago. And the Brendan Lewis at Memphis mm-hmm. ran for 102, 103 last week. So this is a different kind of offense that Arkansas has prepared for in the last few weeks. Now, the flip side of that is I think Notre Dame passes it fairly well.
Yeah.
Memphis didn't pass the ball well. Ole Miss, they passed it well. Mm-hmm. It's just a different kind of offense because where the rushing yards are going to come from Notre Dame are going to be these really good backs. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're maybe a little bit more balanced in terms of being a traditional offense than Arkansas's seen.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It makes me think of, I don't know if this is necessarily describes Carr, but I remember when Sam Pittman was previewing, it might have been Alabama A&M or it might have been Arkansas State. He described, he was talking about the opposing quarterback. I can't remember which one. He said something about he's not like a yard flamingo standing back there. And I'm like, is CJ Carr a yard flamingo where he just doesn't move? Does he just stand there? And I wish I could find the quote, but he was basically trying to say like, they're not having to, it's not like you can just go get him. Like he was talking about how they have to be ready for, you know, somebody to scramble around. And seems like that's not going to be the case here. So maybe this might be their first look at a yard ornament.
Got a special guest here, Lou Holtz. Everybody, Lou Holtz, see him right there? If you're not listening, we've got a Lou Holtz doll from the 1970s. This doll came from my grandfather, who was an antique dealer. He used to have glasses. The glasses broke.
Do you think it looks like Lou Holtz? Because I don't. But I really only know old Lou Holtz.
Yeah, I mean, I think it looks like Lou Holtz from maybe 50 years ago, if he was a Ken doll.
He does. It's very Ken-like.
Yeah, so Lou is going to be at the game this weekend, he said.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah, why not?
He put out a message yesterday on social media that talked about, he said he had 7 great years in Fayetteville. His kids all went to high school in Fayetteville. I think Skip Holtz, I'm pretty sure I've got this right, I think he donated the weights to the Fayetteville High School football program at one point in time. Now, I think they've gotten new machines since then. But like in the old football building over at Harmon, I'm pretty sure that Skip Holtz donated at least some money toward them getting those. So it's a place that it obviously was Lou in his message said that Arkansas was where he learned how to be a big time college football coach. Mm-hmm.
He's 88 years old. I just looked it up because I wasn't sure exactly how
old
he is.
He's getting up there.
Yeah, he's 88. We had a really interesting Ethan talked to Dan Hampton for a Q&A in our most recent Hogs Illustrated and talked to him a lot about Coach Holtz and about playing for him and how that kind of prepared him for his pro career.
You're gonna hold Lou while you're talking about him?
Don't know about that. That's been sitting in here for so long, and I don't think I knew who it was until you started making jokes about it yesterday.
How could you not know who Lou Holtz was? Is it not a spitting image?
Nah, I don't know. His hair is very yellow.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Where did you get that?
Totally, my grandfather.
Your grandfather, yeah. Of course.
Via my aunt. Okay. That's a long story.
I also, while we're talking about props we have, I know you brought some bobbleheads courtesy of the late Bob Holt. Which ones are the new ones? I don't actually know which ones are from Bob's house.
Yeah, so let's see here. We've got John McDonald up there. That came from Bob's house.
Yeah.
And we got Gary Blair over there. Mm-hmm. That came from Bob's house. And let's see here. We got one more. We got Norm DeBrien.
Okay. Those were the ones I thought were new. I was like, I don't think I've seen those before.
Yeah. All personal friends of Bob, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Surprisingly not autographed.
Honestly, yeah.
But, we're trying to add to our bobblehead collection. If you got any old bobbleheads and you want to send them our way, please do. And if you hear thunder,
I hope that came through on the microphone. That was a huge thunderclap.
I mean, it's been storming here for, several days now.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to storm all day today, all day tomorrow. I think it's supposed to be out of here by the game. tomorrow.
So. I think it's supposed to be
Saturday.
Tomorrow.
Don't ask me what day it is.
I think it's going to be kind of hot on Saturday, which sucks. But
all right.
I'm sick of it being hot. We were talking about this earlier. It's supposed to be fall now.
Hey, I want to mention this. We're working this week on the Hogs Illustrated basketball preview.
I am so excited about it.
Because we've never done anything quite like this.
Right. We have done basketball previews before. They have usually been in our weekly football Hogs Illustrated magazine releases, and so they still include stuff from the previous football game and the upcoming football game. This year, we have created an issue that we're working on that will come out during the off week next week that will be just basketball. It won't have any football in it, so it's really nice because it allows us to do a few extra basketball stories and really have an issue that's dedicated to basketball. Because we do a baseball preview issue, we do a big football preview issue. We figured at this point, with the excitement there is around this basketball program, why not do a basketball one? I'm really excited about it. I don't want to reveal too much about the cover, but I will give you a hint that it involves an animal. I'm very excited about it. We did a really fun photo shoot. I cannot wait to share it. We haven't actually designed the cover yet, but we have the photos, and I'm so, so excited. I think people are really going to like it.
Do you want to give a hint about the animal?
I don't think so, because I think it'll give it away. I think if give too much, I don't want to give too much away, but it just it involves an animal. I'm very excited about it. And Ethan and Anthony, you know, we'll have women's basketball content in there as well, which is great because it'll help you get to know this whole new team, whole new staff. And then we've also, of course, got a bunch of men's basketball, and I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be great.
I feel like there's as much excitement for basketball this year. Like, there's more this year than I felt in 30 years. Like, this reminds me of peak Nolan Richardson years. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's when you have a bad football season, like, and again, time will tell whether or not this will be a bad football season. Don't, you know, there's not a lot of optimism for it, certainly. And so you did kind of turn your attention to, basketball.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to have the prime time at the Palace, which is kind of a new twist on Midnight Madness. Mm-hmm. That's coming up October 3rd. I mean, that's next week, next Friday night.
Dang.
You're playing exhibition games against Cincinnati. The night before Auburn against Memphis on a Tuesday night in late October, and the season begins on November 3rd. I was thinking about this. I was in Springfield this summer, in Springfield, Massachusetts. We went on a summer vacation to New England, and my son wanted to go to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame.
Oh, cool.
And it was a little bit out of the way. And at first, I was like, I just don't think we're going to be able to make this work. But you know, I had this thought in my head. You know, like my wife and I, we went on a vacation to Maui one time, and it cost a little bit of extra money to go over to Oahu and see Pearl Harbor and Honolulu. But then it's like, you know, how many times are you actually going to be here where you can spend the, you know, $600 to go see Pearl Harbor?
Yeah.
Just do it. And so that's what it ended up happening. This summer, we went to Springfield and saw the Naismith Hall of Fame, and that's where Arkansas and UMass played. In the year after the Razorbacks won the championship, they opened the season up there. Big game, number one versus number three. We've heard Calipari talk about it. He's got the poster still on his wall with like a likeness of him and Nolan. But that was the night after Thanksgiving. Like that's in 1994-95, the season began the night after Thanksgiving. This year, the season begins November 3rd. So it's a lot easier now if your college football team is not doing very well just to turn your attention to basketball, because basketball season will be here really soon.
Yeah, and especially with the exhibitions they've got that are pretty exciting. I mean, there's a lot. When we were planning on doing this basketball issue, I was worried that this first bye week was too early to do it. But honestly, it's not. They're going to start playing these exhibitions. There's going to be things to talk about and things to see throughout the month of October. We're really excited about it. Another thing I wanted to mention that we're going to do, I know a lot of people really like this in our football preview issues, and we brought it to baseball this past year, where with football, we'll do the coaches' assessment. So we'll go through basically the whole roster. With football, we do kind of all the key contributors anyway. Players they expect are going to be in the mix. You're going to see them on the field frequently. And we get the evaluation of with football, we've done it with Coach Pittman. He gives a couple of sentences about, you know, that player, and we have it next to their picture, and you can kind of see what the coach thinks about every player. We are doing that with basketball this year, which we've never done. Ethan's going to talk to one of the women's basketball assistants, and then Anthony talked to Chuck Martin and talked about all the players, got kind of what he's seen from all of them for, you know, through summer, which I think is really helpful, especially now when so many of these players are new. You know, it's really helpful with football when you're trying to get to know 50 new players or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can get a little bit of an idea of what their skill set is and why coaches wanted them. And so I think especially with the women's team, you're going to get to learn a lot since they're all, most of them are new. So I'm excited that we're going to be able to bring that to basketball as well.
800-757-6277 is the number you can call for Hogs Illustrated, or you can go to hogsillustrated.com/subscribe. Go there now, and you'll be able to have your subscription in time to get this basketball preview. You can also call our office, again, 800-757-6277, and there will be some single issues here that you can buy. The Hogs Illustrated basketball preview coming out soon. When we come back, we're going to talk about our thoughts about the SEC to this point in the season. First, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. I've been working for this company for 15 years, and at some point in time, my company email was put on these crazy listservs, and I get just all kinds of weird stuff. And usually, you know, you just kind of look over it. One kind of caught my eye. I just thought it was kind of humorous and that I would share. This is from the North Star Inbound Survey Group. They say, according to a new survey, 16% of Arkansas fans wear the same socks and underwear to every game, and that's the second highest rate in the nation.
I would love to know how many people were involved in this survey. I need the result. I need the methodology for this study.
Well, enough to get 16%. So,
I don't think
at least
even
seven.
Corey does that. And Corey's pretty superstitious. He's not superstitious, but he's a pretty big fan. So I would guess that that would be, but I don't think he does that.
Other highlights from this include Arkansas ranks number 3 nationwide for superstitious fans. 24% of Razorback fans prefer to watch alone to avoid bad luck. That's the third highest in the country. And this tops all schools nationally. And last weekend, probably a pretty good example of why. 53% of Arkansas fans will not talk about their team's chances to win a game in the middle of a game.
I mean, I guess that makes sense. I don't know. Interesting. It doesn't surprise me that there would be a high level of superstition among Arkansas
fans.
Well,
I think that adds in, like,
totally.
The superstitious nature,
yes,
of the fans.
Exactly. That makes sense.
Contributes to
that
this.
That makes sense. I don't personally know a lot of very superstitious fans. Of any sport, you know, like the Razorback fans in my life, I don't feel like are particularly superstitious. I have a friend, he's actually coming to town this weekend for the Notre Dame game. He's a Notre Dame fan. He is also an Eagles fan, and we watched an Eagles Super Bowl, the Super Bowl they won when I was in college. I can't remember what year that even was. And he did not want us to watch with him. He didn't speak to us the whole time.
I could see that.
Yeah, he was like, he did not acknowledge it. It was like he was in his own. We watched it with him. We made him do it. But like, it was like he was in his own world.
Like when I'm 80 after the Jones family has sold the Cowboys, I will still be watching their Super Bowl, their next Super Bowl, which will be 80 years after the last one. I'll be by myself,
yeah,
probably.
Or I think, yeah, Corey's a Saints fan, and I think he would want to be alone. I don't think he'd want to like have a Super Bowl party if they were ever to.
I don't even like Super Bowl parties. When.
Oh, really? I love an excuse to have friends over and eat snacks.
No.
That's my favorite thing.
No, they're too loud. I can't hear the broadcast.
That's funny. Speaking of snacks and weird emails, since we're talking about weird press releases we get, I keep getting these emails. I don't know how I started getting them, from an advertising company about the porkrinds.com Crunch Time Hero of the Week. Every week they choose a player.
Who was this week's?
Was this week week 3? No, this was week 4. I don't know the week 4 one, but the week 3 one I have in my junk folder was Texas A&M tight end Nate Borkirker. Is that his name? It's wildly spelled.
I will take
name.
Your word for it.
Yeah, he got it for week 3. There's a picture of him holding a chain that says Crunch Time Hero in front
He's
of a
He's the
ton
one who caught the touchdown
rinds.
To beat Notre Dame.
Yeah, and he got a lot of pork rinds for it. That was his prize.
Hmm.
So I've been getting those, which has been
Do
fun.
You like pork rinds?
I don't think I've ever had
I
them.
I think they're disgusting.
I've never had them. I don't think I want to try mm-hmm. them.
No.
I don't think I like. I don't like the phrase pork rinds is not appetizing to me.
No, let's just fry some bacon.
Exactly.
Let's just have that instead. looking around the SEC right now, it's a good weekend for games. Of course, you know you've got the Alabama Georgia game this weekend. It feels like the anticipation for Alabama Georgia this year is not what it's been in the past. Even last year, you know, last year turned out to be this great game. So when we were down in Arlington for Arkansas A&M. Because I got back to the hotel just in time to see him go crazy at the end. There was some anticipation for that game. I don't feel like there's quite as much this time around.
Yeah, I've kind of been feeling that too. I don't think this is a game, at least that I have seen a whole lot of talk about. I know it's only Tuesday. It's early in the game week. But I just feel like I haven't seen that much from it. Or they were both off last weekend, weren't they? I think they both got the weekend off.
I think that's right.
Kind of setting up for this. But yeah, I think it has a lot to do with just what Alabama was and, you know, and has been in these early weeks. And I don't know. I think we'll learn a lot from it, but I do agree with you that it doesn't feel like it has the juice that it normally does.
Alabama's number 17, Georgia's number 5. That probably plays a factor. You know, a lot of times when they play, they're like top 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Both of them are.
Yeah.
The other games this weekend, LSU goes to Ole Miss. Did you see that Lane Kiffin's daughter is dating an
Isn't
LSU linebacker?
Crazy? That's yeah. so crazy. How yeah. does that even, Corey and I were talking about this last night. How does that even happen? How did they meet?
TikTok.
I was like, probably Instagram DM, yeah. which honestly makes it worse.
I don't know. And even Lane Kiffin got in commenting about
that
it.
That was really
week.
Funny.
So LSU goes to Ole Miss. That's going to be this weekend. Auburn's at A&M. That's a fascinating game to me to see if Auburn can bounce back from what happened last week over in Norman. Tennessee goes to Mississippi State. Another really interesting game. Because Mississippi State's undefeated, and they're not ranked, but they look like they're a much better team than they were last season. Then
Definitely.
You got Tennessee, who, my gosh, offensively, I think they look like they might be, if not the best team in the SEC, one of the best.
Yeah, this is kind of Mississippi State's first. I mean, obviously, they beat Arizona State, so this is their first real game since then. So the Arizona State win kind of made us go, oh, shoot, you know, is this Mississippi State team, how good are they? You know, we kind of thought they were going to be bottom of the SEC again, but hey, you know, their first Power Four game, they beat what was then a ranked team. So I think this is their first kind of real telling game since then. They played Alcorn State and then Northern Illinois after that. So this is kind of the next chance we get to learn kind of how good they might be. So I'm very interested in that, especially for what it could mean for Arkansas season for when they have Mississippi State later, because that was one that before the season we go, all right, well, there you can get one. But depending on how Mississippi State turns out to be, that might not be, you know, the as winnable or as maybe easy as we thought it was going to be before the season.
Kentucky goes to South Carolina. South Carolina trying to avoid 0-3 in the SEC. The rest of the rest is non-conference games. Utah State goes to Vanderbilt. UMass goes to Missouri, and obviously Notre Dame comes here to Arkansas. I'm still not ready to put out the efficiency ratings because I want to see every team play at least 2 quality opponents before I do that. But if I did put them out this week, this is what it would look like right now. Who do you think has the best offense in the SEC? The highest rated, the most efficient offense
last
in the SEC.
Last time we did this last week, wasn't it Vanderbilt or were they
it's
overall?
Still Vanderbilt.
It's still Vanderbilt?
It's still Vanderbilt, okay. Yeah. Right now it would go Vanderbilt 1, Ole Miss 2, Georgia 3, Tennessee 4. Defense, best defense in the SEC.
I don't remember who it was last week. I don't know who's allowed the fewest points to big opponents. I'm not sure.
It's LSU.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they do have a really good defense. It's their offense that's a little concerning.
Very, very bad, yes. LSU, Oklahoma, Vanderbilt, Texas, top 4 in defense right now. And then overall, this is kind of fun too. Overall, the top 4 overall teams, again, this is based on how efficient they are offensively and defensively. Vanderbilt 1, Ole Miss 2, Missouri 3, Oklahoma 4.
Interesting that Missouri is not tops in either category, but is in the overall. Are they just like pretty in the middle on both offense and defense?
Let's see. Offensively, Missouri is 5th.
Okay.
Defensively, they're down there. They're,
interesting.
You know, the defense hasn't been quite as good. They're about middle of the pack.
Okay. Interesting that they would come so high overall.
Now, the bottom four in the SEC in terms of efficiency are overall Kentucky, Florida, South Carolina, and Texas. Now, remember, mm-hmm. with Texas, that's why we don't want to put this out, you know, and say that these are real, you know, good gauges yet. Texas, their only game against Ohio State. Mm, we're not talking about what they did against UTEP or whoever else. Defensively, Arkansas, bottom of the barrel. And it kind of surprising right ahead of them is Georgia. Georgia's defense, based on what happened against Tennessee.
Mm, makes sense.
Not great. And then the worst offense, that would be Texas, based on what happened against Ohio State. There is some good data, though, to support that South Carolina, LSU, and Florida offensively are really not very good this year. And that's kind of surprising because all three of those teams have quarterbacks who, when you came into the season and you said, hey, you know, who are your best teams in the SEC, your best offenses, you'd say, well, you know, probably Lenore Sellers is up there. And, you know, some people would say DJ Lagway.
The expectations for Lagway were huge. Yeah, there was Nussmeier and Lagway, like Heisman hype, and then it's just not materialized at all.
So, I mean, that's what it looks like in the SEC right now. Again, it's a little early to put too much. I tell you, here's some teams that I would buy stock in right now. OU defensively.
Mm-hmm.
I think they look really good. Like, really good. Like, this looks like the old school Brent Venables, Bob Stoops defense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did you watch the Auburn game?
I saw the end of it.
They teed off on Jackson.
I mean,
what
they have,
game.
Like 12 sacks or something like
10.
That? 10.
Yeah, let's not give them too many. But 10 sacks.
Same difference.
10 sacks in a game.
That's crazy.
It's insane.
It's insane.
I want to say they had like 8 or 9 sacks against Auburn last year down there.
Didn't they really?
I think it was a really high number. Maybe I'm confusing that game with another, but I think this is 2 years in a row where they have really teed off on the Auburn quarterback.
And didn't R. Mason Thomas have a bunch of those 10 this weekend?
He might have.
I think
I'm
he
not
had
sure.
a,
I haven't
weird,
seen a breakdown.
A high number for an individual player, if I remember right.
Tennessee offense, I'd say put a lot of stock in them. Missouri offensively, put a lot of stock in them. They can really run the ball. This reminds me of a couple of years ago with Schrader when they had him. Vanderbilt offensively, I don't think they're going to stay as high as they've been. You know, the two teams they've beaten that are quality so far would be Virginia Tech and South Carolina, and how quality those teams are. You know, there's obviously, but what Vanderbilt does with Pavia is that it's an old school. It's very similar to what Missouri does.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old school football thing where you just control time and possession, and you limit the number of opportunities that the other team gets offensively. And it works for them.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's working for them even at a better rate this year than it did last year when, you know, they had some success.
Yeah. Do you think after this weekend's games, you'll be ready to actually put the efficiency ratings out there?
Think so. Because I think after this week, everybody will have played at least two quality opponents.
Who did we say Texas plays this weekend? I already can't remember.
No, they don't play anybody.
They don't play? Okay. Yeah. So then I guess they're still the one that they would only have the one quality opponent. Which,
so we might have
crazy.
To wait until the first week of October to do this.
Maybe so.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird with Texas. You know, it's like they come out of the gate, they play Ohio State.
The biggest game.
And then nothing for like a month.
Yeah, San Jose State, UTEP, Sam Houston.
I feel like this week we're going to, if for no other reason than knee-jerk reactions, like there's going to be a favorite in the SEC emerge this week.
Mm-hmm.
Like if LSU goes to Ole Miss and LSU is able to get the offense going, and they win that game, I think a lot of people are going to be on the LSU train. Or if Georgia, like they steamroll Alabama this week, I think there are going to be a lot of people that get on the Georgia wagon. Ole Miss, if they win big over LSU, I could see where a lot of people say, okay, we underestimated them at our own peril, and now they're 5-0. And I will say this. They look like a different football team ever since they put Trinidad Chambliss in at quarterback.
It's been really interesting. That's such an interesting story. I know it frustrates Arkansas because they had to be the first ones to deal with it, but maybe it gives you some comfort if he keeps being able to do that to multiple teams here. But it's been totally different. I wonder, you know, when Austin Simmons is healthy, do you even do that?
Not at
this point.
I don't
think you do.
No.
Yeah.
He got Wally pipped.
Yeah, it's tough.
You know that story, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Texas, they still haven't played anybody? I mean, like they were the preseason favorite. I say they haven't played anybody. They played Ohio State. I'm talking about they haven't played a conference anybody. They were the preseason favorite. I don't know that they're still the favorite, but I don't know that they're not the favorite either.
I don't think you can count them out right now. You can't count them out yet. They haven't played an SEC team. You can't say, I don't know. It's hard. The Arch Manning thing is so interesting because it hasn't gotten a whole ton better. He hasn't looked fantastic against some of these teams that you would expect would make him look pretty good. So what he's able to do when they're at Florida next week is something to watch.
So, I mean, that's the SEC right now. It feels weird that we are to the last weekend of September, and 5 weeks, too, we've had. You know, sometimes you get to the last weekend of September, and it's just the fourth week of the season. That we're through 5 weeks in the season, and I don't know that we've got any better feel for what the SEC race looks like now versus what we had when the season kicked off.
I feel like we're still doing a lot of waiting and seeing.
Yeah, too much waiting and seeing.
I'm tired of waiting.
I mean, seriously, too much waiting and seeing. And this is one of the reasons I like this 12-game or the new 9-game conference schedule they're going to, is because it's going to force teams to play better competition earlier in the season. I feel like college football kind of kneecaps itself a little bit with the way these teams are allowed to schedule early in the year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you might have a big game this weekend, you might have two that weekend, but there's not a ton of games to look forward to every weekend until you get to like October, and then everybody's in the conference race, right? And then, you know, the games start to, not that the early ones don't matter, but they matter a little bit more at that point because you get the playoff rankings that are coming out and everything. And the NFL does it right. I know the NFL's only got 32 teams, and you're talking about however many are in the top level of college football. But I just wish they would schedule better games earlier in the season. I feel like they're doing their fans and honestly their teams a little bit of a disservice by letting them just kind of ease their way into conference play the way it happens.
Yeah, we've talked before about how I know you feel very strongly about how it would be better to kind of get a test earlier and learn more about your team sooner rather than play a bunch of cupcake games and then get smacked in the face in your first conference
game. If you're Texas, Texas, they got all the negative headlines that first week, but I would almost rather take the negative headlines for that 1 week and be better prepared for that second and third big time opponent than I would be to play an FCS team week one, and then a little bit of a better team week two, and then a little bit of a better team, and just ease my way into that. That's how I think teams should schedule. I think that's it creates a different feel about your program. I mean, think about Arkansas in 22. They opened with Cincinnati coming off the playoff. They won that game. There was a lot of excitement about that.
Yeah.
The last few years, even, there just hadn't been excitement. You start with FCS teams and there's just not excitement.
Right.
It's
anticlimactic.
It kills the vibe.
Yeah.
So that's the SEC right now. Don't really know a whole lot about it, to be honest with you. But hopefully we will here in the next couple of weeks. But the efficiency ratings, like I said, 38-31. They like Notre Dame to beat Arkansas. And the line, I think it was at 6.5 points. It's gone down to 4.5. We'll see how that goes this week. Christina, appreciate you being here. We'll be back tomorrow. Got a couple of interviews lined up. Hope to see you then or at our website, wholehogsports.com.